All right. Well, good morning, everybody. As always, you're listening to the ASSP Healthcare Practice Specialty Health Beat podcast. So we appreciate you joining us. So you're listening to our series on best practices from all throughout different industries that we can apply to healthcare safety. So today we're excited to be talking to the environmental practice specialty. So we're talking to Herbert Bell, who is representing them. And we're going to be talking a little bit about his career, his experiences, and all the different aspects that come along with that. So, Herbert, short of me speaking for you, if you can give our listeners just a little bit about yourself, you know, your career experiences, things like that, we appreciate it.
Hi, everyone. I initially got into environmental health and safety after a brief career in operations. At the time, I was working for an orthodontic and dental manufacturer, and an employee stuck his hands into a 60-ton punch press. And two of the fingers clipped off. We thought it was an amputation, but it was just an avulsion. So the whole process involved OSHA coming in and doing a wall-to-wall inspection. Since I was in operations, we needed a manager to move over into safety to help abate the hazards that were there and to work on the citations. That's how I first got into safety. And since that time, I've worked for orthodontic dental manufacturers. I've worked for sterilized injectables, basically a company that made morphine or like EpiPens that you see on most of the with the EMS system. I then worked for a consulting firm. That's how I got into consulting. After I was laid off from a job, that sterilized injectable place, it was bought by another firm, and most of the managers were let go. And that's when I decided to go back to school and get my master's in environmental studies. Through the consulting business, I've seen almost every type of industry you could think of, anything from semiconductor work through road construction. So my career has been very, very exciting, to say the least.
Yeah, that's outstanding. Definitely a lot of great experiences there. I know within healthcare, we definitely have we've felt the effects of the industry, like you were talking about with the injectables. You know, when there's natural disasters, a lot of times it'll affect the production of things like you said, like morphine or I'm drawing a blank on the name now. It's the Dilaudid, the step up from morphine. And so when that happens, then it affects the ability of the healthcare providers to get those medications. So the adjustments had to be made and substitutions and whatnot. So very interesting work, a lot of stuff going on there. So within that scope, what types of hazards, I know you mentioned a second ago, you were talking about amputation, lockout, tagout, things like that. What are the types of hazards that you've seen the most over the years?
I think the biggest hazard I've seen is confined space issues to being struck by vehicles or equipment when we're doing construction work. And I would think probably the biggest hazard would be not only the confined spaces, but fall hazards. You know, if we're working on commercial buildings, then we're more than 6 feet up. So I've seen people fall off buildings. I've almost witnessed like cave-ins during some of the confined space work. I've seen electrocutions. I mean, we had a contractor who was on the site reconstructing one of our buildings, and he didn't lock out the electrical panel, and he got electrocuted right on the site. And luckily, we had a good emergency response team, and we were able to administer first aid and CPR until the paramedics came, and the guy was back to work 2 weeks later.
Oh, that's great. That's great that y'all were able to respond like that. Definitely a lot going on there. In healthcare, you know, we definitely, a lot of times people look at healthcare and, you know, they, rightfully so, they think of the clinical operations and, you know, x-ray and radiology and everything that goes on in the hospital and whatnot. But we definitely have construction. We definitely have, we have fall protection, we have lockout, tagout, you know, all the same things that apply to take care of facilities and new construction projects and everything of that nature. So over the years, I know you mentioned there fall protection, lockout, tagout. What are some of the best practices? What are some of the things that you've spent a lot of time working on that you've found to be very, very successful?
I think working on ISO 14001 and also ISO 45001 were two of the biggest management systems that helped some of my clients, because basically the check and balances in the system actually allow the company to save lots of money and to prevent a lot of injuries. So I would say that those two systems were probably the best two that I've seen in terms of management systems. I'm also a hazmat instructor, and so I've taught hazardous materials training to different companies, and I've also done a HazWhopper for a lot of companies. So I think those are some powerful systems. I teach also construction and also general industry 10-hour and 30-hour classes. And I would say that companies implementing those particular systems tend to do quite well because of the level of awareness that employees have. And lastly, I worked for a construction company who had a process they call speak up, listen up. Anyone in the organization, if they had a safety concern, could speak, and any manager or foreman who were around or superintendents would have to listen to what the employee had to talk about. It didn't matter what level you were at. If you were on the job for the first day and you brought a safety concern to anybody's attention, people had to stop doing what they were doing, the work they were performing, and they had to listen and take your comment seriously.
That's fantastic. And those are definitely beneficial. And to your point, you know, those fundamental programs, you know, with situational awareness and near miss reporting and being able to communicate and escalate concerns, that's definitely applicable to every industry.
I think in healthcare, I think you have certain protocols that pertain to all of the different hospitals in terms of safety and other types of protocols, I think that you have in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, healthcare is interesting. You know, we have, of course, you know, we're regulated by OSHA, you know, except for the exceptions that we all know about. But in addition to, you know, workplace safety, of course, we have infection prevention and control protocols. Then we also have patient safety protocols. So there's a lot that goes on there. I know you mentioned a minute ago hazmat, which is, you know, hugely important. So when you were working with hazmat, did that include everything with like Resource Conservation Recovery Act and CERCLA and SARA and all the different regulations there?
Yes, I was normally, I was the one responsible for making sure all those programs were in place. And you know, and of course, evaluating the type of business to see whether or not those regulations are applicable to the sites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we deal with a lot of that with, especially like in the labs, there's a lot of waste that comes from like xylene or, you know, different reagents and things that are used for lab work. So there's hazardous waste that comes out of that. And then things like formaldehyde or formalin, you know, is in it, the name for it. And then, you know, a lot of that. Then, of course, we also have a lot of biological waste, you know, whether it's medically regulated waste or whether it's huge PPE, especially within the COVID-19 pandemic and back in 2014 with the Ebola situation. Did you ever, or have you seen any situations like that dealing with biological hazards?
Yes. When I was the manager of the pharmaceutical company that was producing the sterilized injectables, we had different types of medical waste that I was responsible for. And that was a pretty interesting sight, because when I got hired on that particular job, we also had a Superfund site at the company. For many, many years, people would just throw out different types of solvents in the back of the company, and eventually it reached the groundwater. And so the EPA came in and declared the site a Superfund site.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's definitely a situation with the groundwater leaching and everything. Now, there's a lot of that with underground storage tanks and things of that nature. Some healthcare facilities, they have tanks, not necessarily underground, but they have tanks a lot of times that they're maintaining their own potable water sources, and they'll have to deal with chlorine. There's a lot to that, isn't it?
there's a lot to it. I mean, I've worked for companies that stored resin materials underground in 10,000 gallon storage tanks, where the state would come out periodically and sample the ground to make sure there weren't any like major problems there. So it's eye-opening when you've had a chance to visit many different types of companies to see how they produce their products and whether or not they're complying with all the different regs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's always interesting, the, you know, you have the supply and demand, you know, in the economy, and a lot of times, you know, a lot of times customers don't realize what it takes to make those products. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, speaking of that, you know, there's like we said, there's a lot going on with that. You have not only the workplace safety, but you've got the environmental regulations, you've got all the hazardous materials, and you know, everything ties together with that. So of course there's a lot of regulations. You've got the Code of Federal Regulations, you've got all the national consensus standards, you know, things like NIOSH and CDC, then you've got EPA. Of course, we all know that, you know, the big difference there is OSHA can issue fines, but if they're going to indict somebody, they have to go through the Department of Justice, whereas EPA can literally arrest somebody for if they have, you know, gross violations. So do you feel like, in your experience with all these different regulations that we work with, do you feel like that's effective?
Sometimes I feel that the regulations are there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to comply with the regulations, because people will just cut corners to make a dollar. And some companies don't even care whether or not they don't care whether or not they're compliant at all. They just don't want to get caught. And so it's not caring for the environment. It's not caring for the people. It's basically, you know, trying to make money. And so I think the agencies like OSHA and EPA, they don't have enough inspectors to make a big impact on certain industries. So, I mean, what are the odds of you having an OSHA or EPA investigation? I mean, I think it's pretty low. So people wait.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. I like how you put that. Is that that's definitely something that we talk about quite a bit, and I've actually heard it in the field from a lot of different organizations as well, where they'll refer to that, you know, the probability of getting an inspection from OSHA or EPA or whatnot. They'll actually put that in their risk management strategy. You know, what they'll say, well, you know, you have risk acceptance, you have risk avoidance, you have risk transfer, you have risk control. And they'll look at it and go, well, statistically speaking, we have, you know, such a small percent chance that they're going to show up here and they're going to look into our matters and our control, that we're going to go to risk acceptance because we don't think we're going to get looked at. You know, we're not going to get caught. And that's always been interesting to me is, you know, like you said, it in some cases, you know, some organizations, especially, you know, those that are lacking in, you know, the ethical area, a lot of times they'll accept the risk of either safety issues or environmental contamination. And it goes beyond just accepting the fact that people might get hurt or there might be contamination or damage to the environment, but they'll look at it as, well, you know, there's such a small chance of us getting caught and getting fined that, you know, we're just going to go ahead and roll with it. And that always a little bit daunting to me.
I agree.
Yeah, it's interesting when you get out there and see all that, for sure. So kind of a different thing. You know, I know that we're looking forward to having y'all involved in our webinar coming up on November the 5th about fatigue and burnout syndrome. Have you seen any other issues? You know, it's like wellness or lifestyle issues, anything that you found that affects safety and environmental other than the direct hazard controls or environmental controls?
I think the wellness side is something big for me. And what I've noticed, it depends on how the founders of the company, it depends on where their priorities are. In the companies where the owners or the managers think wellness is a great thing, we tend to have less injuries in those companies. I tend to see less injuries in those companies than in others where there's a robust health and wellness plan, where people are very active. I tend to see less injuries also. Another place where I tend to see less injuries are those who have a robust ergonomic program. I did some work for one company where as soon as you got hired, you had an ergonomic evaluation. If you moved to another part of the company, you would get another ergonomic evaluation. If you felt like your workstation wasn't perfectly set up, you could request an ergonomic evaluation, and it wasn't frowned upon. It was expected that we provided those services for all of the employees. And I have to admit, there were less absenteeism, and then there was a better feel or the sense of pride in the job was there, because people, you know, knew that the company was taking care of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. That definitely makes sense, you know, because if you're talking about something like ergonomics, not only does it set up the safety culture so that people know that, you know, we're expecting to prevent, you know, musculoskeletal disorders or repetitive motion or awkward positions, things like that. And then that translates into the same culture of, you know, we expect that we're going to have safe working conditions and safe work practices. And we expect that, you know, people to utilize those safe practices and to make, report near misses and any concerns, so we can work on those proactively. And then that tends to translate also to the, you know, you build that culture enough, it tends to translate to the home as well. And that turns into wellness, which, like you said, it prevents absenteeism or even presenteeism. And, you know, the issues, ultimately, those make an impact on things like the pandemic, you know, in terms of overall wellness and holistic, and things like burnout prevention. And that's definitely great. So with the webinar coming up on November 5th, so I understand that y'all are gonna provide a little bit of information on there about about that topic, about burnout prevention. What is the what's the information that y'all are gonna get into?
What we're gonna do is we're gonna look at Tai Chi and Qigong practices, mindfulness, and also both of those particular internal martial arts also provides better balance, flexibility. It provides some area, some means of aerobic exercise to you, and just to keep you on your toes and teaching you how to breathe again. I think once we get older, we tend to breathe from the chest instead of breathing from the abdomen, and we want to explain how to get back into breathing properly, and then also perhaps using some techniques to help you stay mindful.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Yeah, I remember you had put in a what do you call it, abstract for safety 2020 on that topic, and that was great. We'd like to see that. I know it had come across the healthcare practice specialty, and we were excited to sponsor that. So definitely beneficial. Yes. We have, you know, yeah, we have big issues. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I did present at Safety 2021. So I was in Austin, and I presented on Tai Chi Chuan, an approach to mindfulness. So I had a pretty good gathering there in Austin.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I wasn't able to make it to Austin. I was on the, you know, the virtual platform, but what did you think of the conference? How did it go this year?
A bit different, because you didn't see as many people, and part of the networking was limited because they wanted to make sure we didn't have any super spreader type episodes. But mm-hmm. other than that, it was good to see the people in person. It was good to connect with folks, and a lot of vendors were there.
Good. That's great.
Hoping that if the if the humans comply with, you know, social distancing, washing their hands, taking their vaccines if it's required, getting regular checks, you know, testing, whatever we have to do. I'm ex-military, so when it comes to vaccinations, I don't have a big issue with that, because when I was in the military, you got vaccinated whether you wanted to or not. It was, you know, it was mandatory. So with me, you know, I went and got my vaccination as fast as possible. And I volunteer also. I teach Tai Chi over at the University of Delaware. And then I also teach at the VA Medical Center here. And in order to volunteer at the VA Medical Center, you have to have been vaccinated. You also have to take flu shots. And this is the first time in maybe 12 years I had taken a flu shot. But in order for me to volunteer, I have to comply.
Mm-hmm. That's great. What military service were you in?
I was in the Army.
Oh, outstanding. That's great. I was in the Air Force. And for the last couple of years, I was stationed at Fort Leonard Wood. I was an instructor at the Air Force Emergency Management School. So we were joint with the Army Chemical School. That's great.
Your service.
What MOS were you in?
I was corpsman. I was a medic.
That's fantastic. That's great. I would argue that that's, you know, among the most important fields in the entire military. That's fantastic. Cool. Well, heck. So we talked about a lot of different safety issues. Talked about environmental issues. Talked about regulations. Talked a little bit about wellness. So I know all that kind of ties up into y'all's work with the environmental practice specialty. So I know y'all have a lot going on there. I spoke with Richard and Jack a little bit a couple weeks ago. So if you want to give our listeners a little bit of information, what do y'all have going on at the environmental practice specialty lately?
Well, the last year we re-implemented what we call the Environmentor. For years and years we used to have newsletters. Each one of the practice specialties would have a newsletter. And so what we did last year is we re-implemented that newsletter without any support from society. We've done that just within our practice specialty. We publish it, we interview people. It's great. We've done that. We have at least two interviews, I think two or three interviews per quarter with different members of the environmental practice specialty. We're also working on creating a mentorship program, because there's so many environmental regulations out there. In order to support our membership, we've decided to start a mentorship program similar to WISE Consultants and public sector. We thought that would be beneficial for our group. We've been reaching out to some of our members who have more than 30 years of service, just to say hello, interview them, and we've got the practice specialty of the month nominations so that we can highlight what our members are doing. We have attempted to jointly conduct like podcasts, webinars, and other types of activities with other practice specialties so that we can have a more collaborative sort of environment, because many people don't know a lot about the healthcare practice specialty, but by having like this joint podcast today, it enables us to partner with each other and to bring the message forward. We just got our new assistant administrator. It's taken a while for us to get an assistant administrator. But it looks like we're going to have another election coming next, probably around March, so that we can get the new assistant administrator, because our assistant administrator will only be on board for 1 year. So that person has missed, you know, all of last year. So I think that's about it. I mean, we've got so many different webinars going on. I think we got like a webinar almost every month of some kind or another, which we're really excited about.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Yeah, it sounds like y'all are in the same frame of mind as we are at the Healthcare Practice Specialty, where we're aiming to, you know, continue to provide, you know, relevant topics and resources, you know, webinars, podcasts. We also restarted our HealthBeat publication. You know, ASSP, like you said, ASSP had discontinued the practice specialty publication. So some of us have decided to relaunch those. We're excited about that. We did a couple of articles for y'all's environmental, so we're Environmentor. We're happy about that. And then, yeah, definitely the collaboration is great. You know, like we've been talking about, you know, within healthcare, we have some very unique operations, but those also correlate with what goes on in environmental and sometimes public sector, and a lot going on there. So the more we can all, you know, cross wires, then the more everybody benefits. But well, heck, that's great. We're definitely excited about everything y'all have going on, and we'll look forward to talking more as we continue. The last thing I always ask everybody, this is the one I'm always interested in, is so if you had a magic wand, if you could change anything about what goes on in safety or environmental management or you know, first response or emergency management and anything in the world that we deal with, any of the regulations or the controls or the human factors, human performance, wellness, what would you like to change if you could wave a magic wand?
Okay, if I could wave the wand, companies, entities, organizations would go the extra mile to protect the environment and protect the people. Entities wouldn't just do it because there's a regulation that states you have to do it. Companies would go overboard. They would go up and over a base level to making sure that they did the right thing, regardless of what the cost.
Yep. Yeah, that's great.
Because I see it all the time when I'm out there. You know, people, you know, if you turn your back, then the people go to doing what they've always done. When nobody's looking, they will go back to doing what they feel great at. But then there's some companies where it's a mindset and people are doing the right thing all the time. And people are, and I notice that people in those companies are happier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree that I think people have a more of a peace of mind. You know, if they look around and they know that there's, you know, safe working conditions, safe work practices, environmental controls, they know that the organization cares about their, you know, their wellness and their safety, then there's definitely a peace of mind to be had there. And yeah, I agree. If it's interesting how a lot of times people get, not I shouldn't say generalize people, but I've heard some people in the past, you know, where they'll get this kind of weird version of capitalism where they think, well, we need to make more money, And therefore, it's this kind of all the, you know, we pull out all the stops and all the brakes, you know, turn off all the brakes and just go straight forward, even if it means, you know, risk acceptance or contamination or whatnot. So if everybody would just use that as a baseline, and okay, well, all of us across the board need to, you know, have the proper safe work conditions and the proper safe work practices and all the environmental controls. And then from that point, once everybody's on the same playing field, you know, with everything being as, you know, reasonably safe and environmental management is in place, then it can go into the process of, you know, the full-on capitalism. But it's a challenge because, you know, those conversations inevitably, you know, turn, there's going to be someone that claims somebody's trying to be socialist or communist or, you know, it's a tough conversation to have without accusations. But I do agree. I wish there was a fundamental level of safety and environmental management. But well, heck, it's definitely great conversation today. We covered a lot. We're excited about everything going on in environmental practice specialty. We a lot of best practices we talked about with everything from safety regulations and safe work practices all the way to, you know, different environmental regulations and wellness, fatigue management, Tai Chi, all that good stuff. So definitely a lot of great stuff, a lot of great best practices. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today before we wrap it up?
Well, I think this has been it's been great for me, and I always think about how you take a moment and you just remain still and you just breathe from your gut. You breathe it all the way in, all the way up through your chest, and then you release it, just to stay mindful.
That's great advice. Yeah, I often have to think about that myself. It's real easy to get caught up in the, you know, the day-to-day business and the get kind of swept away in that. So it's good to definitely take a moment and recalibrate. Well, cool. Well, heck, sure appreciate you being here today. Definitely a great conversation, but we'll go ahead and, I know you're real busy, we'll go ahead and tie it up today, but for everybody listening, yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, we have some webinars coming up. So we'll be doing a webinar coming up in October. It's going to be about the OSHA Emergency Temporary Standard about COVID-19. And we'll be doing a webinar in November, like we talked about earlier. It's going to be on preventing burnout syndrome and fatigue and overexhaustion. So that's going to be coming up. And then we'll have some more coming up in the winter. So definitely stay on the lookout for that on our ASSP communities page and our LinkedIn. And then always check out our Anchor, which is anchor.fm/ASSP-HCPS-HealthBeat. And that's our podcast landing page. It's got 20 episodes up now. It'll be 21 when we add up today's episode with Herbert and the environmental practice specialty. So with that being said, Herbert, again, we sure appreciate being here today.
It was a pleasure. It was an honor.
Cool. Thank you. And everybody out there, we'll talk to you real soon. Everybody have a great day.
Goodbye.